I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Let's face it, one of the features of life in a country where capitalism is the nation's lifeblood is that we need to make space in our lives for the different ways, those sort of the creative approaches of the people who are in the business of... Just a minute, please. Hello? No, I don't have a crack in my windshield. No, I don't want to talk about other issues involving... No, I don't need paint either. Look, this is a radio pro... No, and there isn't another time I'd sooner... I have to go. Look, no, yes, thank you. No, same... No, and even if you came over here and broke my windshield, I wouldn't pay you to fix it. No, and I don't want a free lube... Look, buddy, I'll tell... Goodbye. Connection listeners, this hour we're talking about telemarketing, and we're talking about spam. The call that comes at the most inopportune time and those little cockroaches of commerce that clog your computer, offering everything from shrinking mortgage rates to increasing the size of various parts of your body. Do you have time for the direct marketers? Are you signing up for the do not call? Would you sign up for the do not spam? And really, when it comes to this kind of guerrilla capitalism, do we need more regulation or less? Our number for the next hour is listed as Do Call, and it's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we start this morning with Adam Goldberg. He's policy analyst at Consumers Union in Washington, D.C. Hi, Adam.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We were looking earlier this morning at the Do Not Call website. They say they've now got something like 15.3 million requests from people who want to have their phones clear from telemarketers. Are you surprised at that response?
I'm not surprised that there's been a good response, but in less than a week to have over 15 million people sign up, I am a little surprised at that volume.
But you were among the groups lobbying to have this done, right?
Absolutely. This is something that's long overdue.
Tell me in a nutshell, Adam, how does it work if I sign up?
Sure. Well, if you sign up in 90 days when the list goes active in October, you're going to start receiving fewer and fewer calls during the dinner hour. The only ones who will be able to call you telemarketers are those that you've had a pre-existing relationship with in the last 18 months and political organizations, polling firms, and charities. But otherwise, you're not going to get the cold call anymore.
Oh, who's going to stop them?
Well, the FTC, the federal government, is the one that is administering the list and will enforce it. And obviously, our hope is that once the list is up and active, that if there are problems, the FTC will take action.
So if I get one of these calls, I'm told that the person who calls me unbidden can actually be fined over $10,000. Do you think it'll really work?
Well, it does remain to be seen, but I think the fact that the FTC has moved forward with an aggressive list that so many Americans are interested in signing up for it is going to put a lot of pressure on them. As long as they have the resources to do it, we're hopeful that they will enforce it and that it will have effect. Also, of course, we hope that the fact that there is a list will get the telemarketers to adhere to it and not make the phone calls in the first place.
Adam, thanks for your time.
No problem. Thank you.
Connection listeners, just a note for you. In fact, we'll have a link on our website to that Do Not Call website that the federal government has set up if you want to explore it a little bit further. I want to move to Doug Adams, who's also on the line. He's director of marketing for Insight Express, an online market research firm in Stanford, Connecticut. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. You did a quick survey on this Do Not Call registry. What was it that you were looking for?
Well, we did a survey over the weekend to find out what the awareness of the call list was right after the announcement, which was pretty high. And of those people, how many people were registering to basically ascertain the demand for this? And about 3 in 5 had heard of the list as of the weekend, and about half of those who had heard about it had signed up for it.
So, do you think that a lot more than 15.3 million people are eventually going to have their numbers listed here?
Oh, I think that once the word gets out and there was problems with the site on Friday, it was so inundated with people wanting to get to the site that it was hard to get to the site actually. So this list will be substantial. It's not even a week old.
Were the people you were talking to giving you any idea as to why this is so popular?
You know, consumers are really telling us in the survey that they've reached a boiling point, not only with telemarketing calls and people trying to sell them things, but they've also reached a boiling point, I guess at internet speed, you could say they're fed up with spam as well. And two out of three people said spam was actually just as much, if not more of an issue than these phone calls.
That kind of surprises me because the spam doesn't interrupt a family conversation or the dinner hour. What's the explanation for that?
Well, you are definitely inundated with it, and the messages can sometimes be, as you referred to at the top of the show, a little bit offensive, something that you don't necessarily want to see your kids have your kids see. A lot of kids do have their own email boxes these days, and the filters aren't always working. Mm-hmm. They definitely are not a cure-all. The filters don't. There are many companies who profess to be able to get around the filters. There's definitely a cry for legislation from the consumers right now. 8 out of 10 asked had expressed interest in a do not email list as well as a do not call list.
And we'll be talking a little bit about that as the program progresses. Doug Adams, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Doug is Director of Marketing for Insight Express, an online market research firm in Stamford, Connecticut. I'm joined now from the NPR studio in New York by Adam Hampt. He is president of Hampt, Byrne, Rayboy & Partners. That's a marketing, advertising, and business strategy firm based in Manhattan. Adam's also a monthly columnist for Inc. magazine and a frequent commentator on Marketplace. Here in the studio with me in Boston, David Weinberger. He is a web blogger, a columnist for Darwin magazine, and the author of numerous essays and books, including most recently Small Pieces Loosely Joined. It's a book about the Internet. And David's also a contributor to NPR's All Things Considered, WBUR's Here and Now. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you had a chance to listen into a little bit of what's happening in the world of telemarketing and the fact that it's spilling over into spam. Adam, let me start with you, if I can, just on the telemarketing. Are you at all surprised at the degree of consumer angst here?
Not really. I think what happened with telemarketing is basically that the telemarketers never thought this day would come, and now they are in trouble. What they should have done was recognize that there should be some self-regulation going on and give consumers the opportunity to say, don't call me at the dinner hour, as you pointed out, and have the sensitivity not to call people on holidays. But they didn't do that because they really lacked the vision to understand what was happening in the consumer mind. And then it reached the boiling point, as one of the previous commentators pointed out. And now we're at the legislation crossroads. But it's an example of an industry really being tone deaf when it came to the consumer.
And the spammers, are they guilty of the same insensitivity?
I think they are. They're very different than the telemarketers, who most of them are larger companies, big Fortune 500 brands. Telemarketers are much more fractured, smaller, and even less likely, frankly, to have any degree of self-regulation.
And if I understand what I'm reading correctly, David, what we could see in a restriction on the telemarketing is an increase in spamming. One of the companies that was interviewed, Allstate Insurance, for example, which does a lot of telemarketing, says, hey, no problem, we'll just go to the Internet.
AT&T said something very similar, according to the report I read, and it will be a bad thing. It will backfire. We can only hope.
In what way will it backfire?
Spam is a problem because of what it's interfering with. It's not interfering with your dinner hour because you get to go to your email box when you want,
right.
But it is interfering with what is arguably the most important new social network on the Internet, which is all done through email. And when your inbox gets overwhelmed with spam, it makes email unusable, and that cuts at the heart of why people are on the Internet in the first place.
So you're saying people will just stop using email, and the spammers will, in fact, kill the goose that's laying whatever these eggs are?
Well, that's the danger. That's the threat that spam poses.
Tell me, Adam, do you share that concern as well, or that sort of sense of what's ahead?
Well, I think there's no question that for many people, spam is an inconvenience. I don't see it, frankly, rising to the level where it will interfere with email communication and the social implications of that to the point where people just abandon the platform altogether. Look, there are many inconveniences and interferences that we put up with as being members of this capitalist free market environment, and spam is one of them. Telemarketing is one of them. Advertising in movie theaters is another one. And what we have to do is just find a way to encourage those who are engaged in that practice to recognize, as I said before, that they need to put natural boundaries on these things. And the problem is that there haven't been natural boundaries on these things.
Now, I heard you on Marketplace going a lot farther than that. I heard you on Marketplace saying spam is almost a good thing.
Well, what I didn't necessarily editorialize or have a value judgment about it, but I did say that it's a manifestation of the free market and that I personally get nervous when one particular aspect is singled out for regulation. And I think that in the case of spam, it's because, frankly, spam is what I called outsider capitalism. And there's a lot of marketing that goes on that's more elitist.
What do you mean by outsider capitalism? Sorry to interrupt,
Adam.
I just don't know what you mean.
Well, you don't find, as I said, the big Fortune 500 companies engaged in spam. It's people selling medicine offshore. It's the you-know-what extenders. It's those things that are at the margins of the economy versus those people that are the kind of the white shoe marketers out there. Now, I didn't see the reference to that AT&T is thinking of getting into the spam business. I frankly think that cooler heads will prevail, and they won't do that. There are massive privacy issues that all these companies are grappling with, not just as it relates to spam, but as it relates to communicating with their own customers. There's a high degree of sensitivity to opt-in emails in general. So I can't frankly foresee a company that has strict privacy policies about communicating with its own customers suddenly resorting to spamming the universe.
David Weinberger, we are a capitalist country. Does that mean there has to be space in our email account for some spam?
Sure. There's especially since what counts as spam is can never be decided. It's not a clear-cut question. It can't be a clear-cut question. There are lots of things that I get that I don't ask for in email that I nevertheless want, including references from friends, including messages from my congresspeople. So there isn't any absolute real definition of spam, and obviously anything that's done would have to be on the side of allowing rather than being overly strict. And I absolutely agree with Adam that we need to be extremely careful about what we do in order to solve this problem. But I think it's also important to recognize that it is, in fact, a problem and what it's a problem for. I get 600 emails a day. 550 of them are spam. And I can manage that. I have good filtering software, and it's manageable.
Do you have to go through and delete every single one of them, or are you saying that your filter is taking care of a good number of that 550?
Well, the filter I use is 99.5% accurate, which means that it's not entirely accurate, which means that some of the stuff that it thinks is spam isn't. So I do need absolutely to look at everything that it thinks is spam and to say yes or no. And you can do that, it turns out, pretty quickly when it's 600 or 550 messages a day. But there's no reason in a free market why it won't be 6,000 messages a day, and then I can't handle it. Then email is broken.
Which is why there are currently, I think, 4 bills before Congress, all of them recommending a do not spam type legislation. And Connection listeners, we're interested in hearing from you. Do we need that kind of regulation? Because we're talking about spam, junk mail, telemarketing. Are you signing up on the do not call registry? Would you sign up for do not spam? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Connection listeners, I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio, which means that you're probably deleting some of your spam while you're listening to National Public Radio. At least if you can stay with us and avoid picking up the telephone, you may be also able to avoid the telemarketers. But what about all that kind of direct merchandising and marketing? Is it something that has to be a part of our lives in this society today, or should there be rules and regulations and ways of governing that? We're talking about the upside and the downside of direct marketing this hour. We'd like to hear from you. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. With me on the program, Adam Hampt. He's president of Hampt, Byrne, Raiboy & Partners. It's a business strategy, marketing, and advertising firm based in New York City. And you've probably heard Adam if you're a listener to Marketplace on NPR. David Weinberger is in the studio with me. He's a columnist for Darwin Magazine and author of a number of essays and books, most recently Small Pieces Loosely Joined. David, let me start with you because we ended our conversation before the break by talking about the legislation that's currently before Congress. Everybody seems to have a proposal for a way of stopping, controlling, or regulating spam. Is this the way to go?
I don't think so, at least not now. It's way too early. And it violates what is a principle by which the Internet was built that accounts for a lot of the Internet's value, which is called the end-to-end principle. But the idea is that you keep out of the center of the Internet anything that may even look like a service. So built into the Internet itself, there's no security built in. There's no search engine built in, because the idea was that then people who are on the ends of the Internet, the users, mm-hmm. will innovate and come up with their own ways of doing it, and will have better security, will have better search engines. And that's a big source of why the Internet's value. So resorting to legislation, particularly legislation that is going to have very wide-ranging effects that cannot be predicted, seems to me to be premature and will detract ultimately from the Internet's value as a place for innovation.
But if your email account weeks or months from now does balloon to 6,000 messages a day, you might be whistling a different tune?
I might be, depending on how well the good guys are keeping up with the bad guys. We're constantly leapfrogging.
Whether or not there is a way to control it without putting up great big bars and barriers on the freedom of the net as it stands right now?
Exactly.
Adam, I wonder if I can ask you to give us a bit of history here, because when we look back at direct marketing techniques, I wonder whether or not we'd have been speaking about, well, I don't know, you help me, television advertising or telemarketing, using these same terms, if we were talking about it 10 or 15 years ago, did they all start as a kind of guerrilla capitalism, outsider capitalism?
I think if you look back at the history of new media in general, it is the smaller, more entrepreneurial companies, if you will, that adopt those platforms first, because in general, new platforms pose a higher risk. And more conservative organizations are just not ready to take that risk right away. I mean, I think direct mail is a really good example of that. For a long time, direct mail was really the proletariat aspect of advertising. The people who were direct mailers were looked down upon by the mainstream advertising industry. Big companies would never deign to put their messages in the mailbox of Americans. It was really only in the, let's say, the mid-70s and after that, when that direct mail became elevated, if you will, as a proposition that larger companies found acceptable. And today, all the big brands use direct mail. And as you rightly pointed out, direct mail is going to be the beneficiary of some of the telemarketing dollars that now need to be spent through a different medium. So yes, there is a history of the more fringe marketers being the first to adopt new technologies.
There's a difference here, though, and the difference is that even direct mail costs something to the people who use it. Television advertising certainly does. Telemarketing, the numbers that I was looking at last night said that they'll spend $80 billion in getting the message out, and they'll make $100 billion, which means a $20 million profit, which isn't too bad. But, I mean, the thing about the Internet is, you know, aside from whatever it takes to get the stuff into the system, it's pretty well free, isn't it, Adam?
It is, and this relates to the point David made earlier about his reluctance to kind of changed the ecosystem that has made the Internet what it is. And the fact is that there are low barriers to entry in the Internet world. That's why marketers who we like and respect can get into that that medium at low cost, and that is also an invitation to spammers as well. That's kind of the good and the bad of what the Internet represents. There is, however, even though it's a low bar to entry, there are fixed costs involved with spamming. And at some point, I think there will be such a reaction to the emails clogging up that even those people who are now clicking through and giving the spammers whatever revenue they're getting will stop, because you simply can't – if you're going to find 6,000 emails from spammers, even if you are spam a spam-friendly reactor, you're not going to be able to find the one that's right for you. So I think what's going to happen is that it will reach the tipping point, and then they will kill the goose that spammed the golden egg, if you will.
The difference isn't simply, I don't think, that the internet is free. I think there's a more important, that's a hugely important point, obviously, but I think there's actually something that's even more important, because you can't explain the way in which the internet has been taken up by over 600 million people and the fervor, almost the spiritual fervor that it's ignited, by simply referring to the fact that it's free. Something else is different. And I think that what's different is that even though the internet looks like a broadcast medium to business and certainly to spammers, it looks like slow TV to many businesses, a cheap way of getting messages out to a passive audience. That's absolutely not what has driven people onto the internet. We've gone onto the internet in large part, huge generalization coming up, by the way, in large part because we want to connect. We found that there are other people in the world, all around the world, that we can talk with in our own voice about the things that we want to talk about, as opposed to sitting on the couch, facing forward, and receiving messages from companies that are trying to sell us stuff. That's what is, a lot of that is done through email. That's what spam ultimately threatens. And I don't, the only way to understand the, I think, the only way to talk about the importance of spam is to talk about what is driving people onto the net in the first place.
But, you know, to me, it's like a sign on the side of a bus. If I spend a part of my morning clicking through the newspapers, at the end of all that, I have about a dozen little pop-up windows that I have to deal with because the price of looking at the Washington Post or the Times of India, for goodness sake, means that, you know, these are all the invitations to send money to relatives back home that have to be dealt with. And are you saying, David, that I ought not to have to deal with that, or that is perhaps a price I have to pay?
It's clearly a price you have to pay, but there's a difference between the pop-up windows that you get when browsing and spam, which threatens to overwhelm email to the point where email isn't usable.
Yeah, I realize I sort of changed the conversation by talking about pop-ups instead of spam, but it's all sort of the corporate invasion of the web.
Well, but there's a self-regulating mechanism with the pop-ups. Namely, if a page is giving you too many, you don't go there anymore.
That's
or
right.
You get a pop-up killer. But yeah.
Adam, sorry, I cut you off there.
No, I was just going to say that I completely agree that the community, if you will, although that word is so seriously overused, the community nature of the internet, the connectivity, is what drives a lot of people there. I think in a way, spam is kind of a capitalist blog. And I kind of view, in a way, what spammers are doing as an outgrowth, although we might find it an unattractive and tawdry outgrowth, an outgrowth nonetheless of that ecosystem that allows people to interact rather than sit back and get the message from their TV. So it's kind of an unintended evil of all the good that the ecosystem of the internet represents.
All right, Connection listeners, let's hear from you. Are we talking about capitalist bloggers here on the net? And should they be restrained? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. You will likely get through if you call. And we're going to Hampton Beach, New Hampshire. Jonathan's with us. Hi, Jonathan.
Good morning. How are you all doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Good.
Well, first point I want to make is that I did sign up for the Do Not Call logs. Second point that I want to make is I hate spam. I have my Hotmail inbox is inundated with it, not to high numbers like you guys were talking about. But the real point is I'm a small computer consulting company, and I'm looking at targeting a very specific market and getting my message out there. And I could do it via advertising. I could do it via direct mail. I already have a direct mail piece, which looks very nice, but is not very targeted, and it doesn't have a call to action. And so I'm starting to think I want to send email. And there's great email systems that allow me to track who's seeing it, what they're doing on it, and allows me to follow up with those people.
Call it spam, Jonathan.
Call it spam, okay. I will call it, well, but the point is, you know, I talk to professional marketers and I'm listening to all the brouhaha and I'm at a quandary and I've actually put the brakes on what I'm going to do because I don't know what's going to be the most effective, cost-effective method
of
getting message out there.
Jonathan, stay out of my mailbox, okay? And if you have something interesting to say, and I'm sure you do, then start a weblog, a real weblog, not a capitalist spam weblog. I don't even know what that is, but an actual honest-to-goodness weblog where you get to talk about the stuff that's interesting to you. And if it's interesting to other people, they'll link to you, we'll find you, you won't make enemies.
Okay, but let's be fair with Jonathan. Is he going to get the kind of traffic if he starts a weblog that he's looking for by sending out the sort of shotgun approach to people's emails accounts?
Well, now, and I'm also going to be very specific about who I want to target. I'm not just going to send out 6,000 emails. I want to send out a manageable quantity that I can follow up on.
All right, Adam, let's hear from you. Should he go the spam route?
Well, that gets back to the point David made earlier about what is spam. That covers a wide territory. A targeted outbound email campaign to a limited list setting forth the specific attributes of this business and why this particular audience should be interested is something I don't consider spam. It's using the Internet just like you would use traditional direct marketing.
Everybody else considers it. Adam, I think you'll find that everybody else considers it to be spam. We don't know how many other people it was sent to, right? We just get it in our email box, and it's not something we asked for, and it's trying to sell us stuff. It's spam.
Well, again, I think that the common parlance and what most people, I would think, mean by spam is the buy these drugs, get my septic tank clean, get a mortgage for less, blanket emails that obviously go to millions and millions of people at the same time without any targeting whatsoever. To me, once somebody is identified as being in a specific group that this message has relevance to, that rises above spam.
Jonathan, last word to you.
Well, I'm still confused as ever.
I'm thank sorry we didn't fix that for you, Jonathan.
Thank
I like
you
to
for
think
taking my phone call. Like have a nice holiday weekend.
Same to you.
You know, Adam, you used the word community. You used very carefully and backed off of it, as right. I think we both agree is proper, because community is a very special word. And I think a word that actually works much better for characterizing much of what goes on the Internet is just conversation. And if you think about the Internet as a set of conversations carried out in a variety of media, including email, you can ask whether the email message you're about to send is actually a conversation or whether it's an interruption of somebody else's conversation. I think Jonathan is about to interrupt conversations. I don't think he's actually going to be starting a conversation. He might be, in which case, yeah.
He might be. I think if he wanted to create an effective outreach campaign, he would try and create a dialogue with his prospects and not just have it a one-dimensional route. I agree with you, but I don't think it's inconsistent to convert an outbound email campaign into a conversation with a group of prospects and hopefully clients for him.
All right, Connection listeners, 1-800-423-8255. Next to Newton, Massachusetts. Now Peter's with us. Hi, Peter.
Yes, hi there. I just wonder, I mean, first of all, I wouldn't buy through spam only because it sort of feels like a circus carny trying to sell me, and there's something a little sleazy about it. I don't quite trust it. But at the same time, I wonder if spam, if the technology, if spam is helping to drive the technology of Internet, you know, use that.
I mean, it's certainly helping with the development of all kinds of money being spent on filters,
right.
Peter.
And,
is that part of it?
Did they, I don't know if spam is responsible for it, but we now give our credit cards through the Internet. There's a way for companies to process and so forth. And I don't know whether it was spam that perhaps got us to that point where we could use our credit cards, and I wonder in the future whether, you know, spam will help drive the technology further, you know, so that there's more ways of using the Internet, of buying on the Internet, of advertising on the Internet.
Let
right
me take
now,
to that in
really
two parts
level.
If I can, Peter. And the first one
sure.
I'll put to Adam Hanf, and that is somebody's buying, Adam. I mean, they wouldn't continue to try and sell me larger things if somebody wasn't paying for it.
There's no question people are buying. Because of the efficiency of the Internet, not as many people have to buy to make it a profitable enterprise for the spammers as many people have to buy via direct mail because of the embedded costs in direct mail. So you don't need a lot of return to make money off spam. That is the case. You could also argue that some of the services that the spammers are putting out there, for example, Check Your Credit Online, are valuable consumer services. So, you know, it's kind of ironic for, in that sense anyway, for traditional consumer advocates to be against spam when when you look at that particular functionality, spammers are actually helping people who might not otherwise have access to those credit checking services.
I don't know that I'd give them my middle name to check my credit. That's where I would hesitate to go with something like that. But I want to just try and pick up the last part of what Peter was talking about in terms of whether or not there isn't some kind of technological benefit spin-off from spam, David.
Well, we would get that benefit without needing spam to drive it. What it's driving is smarter ways of recognizing, having computers recognize what a document, what a page, a message is about, which is very hard to do. But that was going ahead anyway. I'm afraid that it's going to drive a different sort of technology, which we're already hearing about from this little company in Redmond called Microsoft, which has been talking about its trusted computing. It's a huge euphemism for something much darker, I believe. It's Trusting Computing Initiative, with regards to spam, would authenticate who you are and allow you to decide who you're accepting from. But the price that we pay is a system, a computing system, hardware and software, that ends up being locked into Microsoft, and also, not coincidentally, locked into people who are trying to sell us downloadable services like Hollywood. So
I completely agree, and I think that when Microsoft takes a very visible and public stance against spam, you wonder if their end game isn't exactly what David just laid out, which is to create a even stronger hold on its customer base.
Do you mean this is a shift from rabbit ears to cable, that eventually we're going to be so hardwired into Microsoft in order to take advantage of the benefits that they claim to be offering? Is that what you're saying, David?
Yes, that's exactly it.
You know, I should thank Peter for the call and make just one more comment. When AOL is stopping 2.5 billion spams a day, Microsoft is stopping 2.5 billion spams a day. We've got to give them a little bit of credit for protecting us from that, don't we, David?
Well, they stopped my newsletter because it contains words that it considers to be spam. So.
Yeah, well, try sending an email that has the word dick in it. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, we'd like to hear from you in our conversation today about direct marketing, email, spam, telemarketing. What works? What doesn't? Do we need to make space for the capitalists among us? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon, and this hour we're talking about the annoyance and the efforts made to control things like telemarketing and spam. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. In fact, a congressman from New Jersey, Rush Holt, picked up the phones, listening to us in Sable Forks, New York. And Congressman Holt, you're involved in seeing this at the legislative end. What are the constituents telling you?
Well, I should say that as a homeowner, telephone owner, and internet user, I see it myself. But what's more important than what I see is that what I hear from my constituents, and they are certainly upset by the phone interruptions. And New Jersey has already acted on that, and I think maybe that will the concern there will subside. The concern about internet is huge. I hear about it all the time from all over my district. But there's a new concern that's rising that I wanted to bring up, and that has to do with text messages on cell phones. Millions of Americans are now getting these cell phones that allow you to receive text messages. And the marketers are not far behind, and there's now spam on these cell phones. It's a big problem in Europe and Japan. I'm only beginning to hear about it here in my New Jersey district, but I think it's going to be huge. In Japan, there are now the largest cell phone subscriber service says they have 30 million spam messages a day. And text messages in the United States, not necessarily spam, but text messaging is growing rapidly on cell phones in the United States. It's now about a billion a month.
I mentioned earlier, Representative, that there are at least four bills before Congress looking at different ways of trying to control this. But give me your judgment whether or not there's a real appetite in both parties for making some moves that will control this. Because you've listened to David and Adam talking about, you know, certain aspects that really ought to be left alone, and that's a part of the argument as well.
Well, Dick, I think there is a mood to do something about it simply because the outcry is so great. The public says, do something.
And how far do you think you could go? I mean,
I'll tell you on this specific thing that I was talking about, the cell phone spam, I have a bill in that's patterned after a legislation from about 10 years ago, actually 1991, to deal with an earlier technology, and that was the fax, junk fax. Remember, you'd come back to your office after lunch and you'd find 50 pages on the floor where, you know, everybody had been spamming. The word wasn't around then.
It was a 5% discount at the local dry cleaner. How could you pass that up?
Well, in fact, the junk fax law helped bring that under control.
Yeah.
It allowed a person who felt that they had been subject to this unfriendly faxing to bring suit, and the faxer could be fined. Well, I have legislation that is similar to that.
In a nutshell, what would it do?
Cell phone spam.
In a nutshell, it would do what? It would make it illegal for people to send that?
That's right. If you have been repeatedly spammed on your cell phone, you can go after the spammer in court. There'd be a civil fine of between $500 and $1,500 per violation. And
let me turn that over to David Weinberger, if I can, because David, in a way, that's like dealing with harassment.
Yes, but it's also dealing with harassment in a new medium. The internet is different and more important than fax machines, and we don't know what it's going to become. We don't know what it can become. We're just right at the very beginning of this huge global experiment, and it makes me extremely nervous to hear about legislatures that are going to legislate changes that I don't believe they overall fully understand, nor do they fully understand what the net is doing.
But you yourself were saying earlier that it's at risk of being overwhelmed by the spam, by it becoming a useless tool, regardless of what it becomes. So how do you balance...
if I can jump in here, I would say that the public understands this pretty well. They understand the strength of the Internet. I mean, you yourself say that's the beauty of the Internet, is this populist tool.
Right.
They understand very well, and they are saying, we've got to bring this spam under control. It is getting out of hand.
Congressman, thanks for your call.
I have one question for the congressman.
Okay, go ahead. Stay with us,
sure,
Mr. Holt.
Congressman, I was just wondering if you could enlighten us as to why telemarketing from politicians was not made a part of the do not call legislation. I find it just as offensive to get 15 calls from congressmen the day before Election Day than to get calls from American Express.
Well, I'll be sure not to call you then. I don't know. I actually don't know why that was done. I try to be myself careful in how I use the phone.
Do you use telemarketing though?
That was similar in various states too. I mean, I think a variety of states allowed the political exemption in that. And I suppose since the politicians were making the laws in those states, maybe it's not surprising.
Well, Congressman, I'm glad you used the phone today to call us. Nice to have you on the program.
Good to talk to you.
Congressman Rush Holt from New Jersey. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And Dimitri's joining us now from Boston. Hi, Dimitri.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Basically, I have two comments. I'm a VP of Systems Operations, and I'm kind of in a dichotomy here. One, I manage our internal mail servers and have to deal with spam regularly. And the other thing is our company does do bulk email services for our company. So my first comment was the spam that was coming into our office really affected our ability to do business. Apparently they got a hold of some of our company distribution lists, and we were receiving 50, 60, 100 email messages a day company-wide. These are messages going out to the entire company. It became a very big issue when one of the females in the company complained that she did not want to see this stuff on her computer. So that prompted us to put in some spam filters. And, yeah, that's helped, but it's still a bear to manage. My second comment
well,
is...
Hang on a second here. You're part of the problem as well as trying to be part of the solution. How do you reconcile the two?
Well, that's a really good point. Well, one of the things that we do, we have very strict policies about when we send out emails for our clients. We there has to be an opt-out solution. There has to be, the email is traceable. You're able to find the source server and any place that we go to that we present or promote, has to have specific rules on allowing people not to get these emails. In addition, we
you
only
mean a little button that I can click, which says "Never bother me again."
Right. In addition, we only send to people who have opted into these email lists. So we're not actually bulk mailing, from a dictionary list of email customer of potential email addresses. But we're target marketing, and I think that's the key here. Is target marketing.
Just stay with me for a minute, Dimitri, because I want to ask Adam whether or not, Adam, you believe that the answer is going to be found in the very dilemma that Dimitri's facing, because not only does he recognize that it's something useful for his company, but that he can't alienate people, and he sees the problem as the systems operator himself. So is that where the answer comes from rather than the regulators?
Well, I think that, as I said earlier, that self-regulation is certainly preferable to any legislation. And many new media, and I know the Internet is different, but in the early days of television, the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, was formed because progressive individuals understood that to the extent the industry could get together and delimit some of the negativity that might result, otherwise they can stay a step ahead of the regulators. I think it would be preferable in all these cases if we could see that, although, as I said before, it's unlikely because spammers are so fractured and aren't at all traditional marketers.
We actually have someone else on the line who has some notions about self-regulating spam. So, Dimitri, I'll thank you for calling in, and we'll bring Eric into the program. Eric's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling. What do you think?
Well, I think self-regulation is definitely the way to go. I think the question of the congressman that highlighted, having Congress pick and choose certain types of speech that would be allowed to go through and others that wouldn't, depending on people writing the laws or the people who are making campaign donations, is a very dangerous path to go down. On the other hand, I don't think we can just do nothing and let anarchy reign, because it's going to become increasingly dysfunctional as email gets more expensive.
You know what drives me nuts, though, Eric? I come home to my mailbox, and there is a pile of folders in there of all different sizes and shapes all stuck together, and I know that they put it together that way because it means I can't throw it all out. I have to actually go through it page by page to make sure there's not an important piece of mail in there. And if that's self-regulation at the direct mail marketing level, I'm not sure that I want to trust the spammers to do...
Yeah, let me propose a kind of... I think we need a little bit of help. Self-regulation needs some help. It needs to create some institutions, just like the stock market or lots of other of our institutions allow people to trade and successfully create wealth. I think that...
Eric, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to let you go because your line is deteriorating on it, which is too bad, because I kind of wanted to hear the tail end of what you're saying. But David, I'm going to get you to chime in here on whether or not we can look to self-regulation as a way of controlling this, because at one level, you've got the people like Dimitri who have a certain level of responsibility, but then you've got all the other people selling whatever who will never.
Yeah.
Be a part of that.
I don't think that self-regulation is good, of course, but I don't think that it's going to be a meaningful solution to this problem. For exactly the reasons that Adam first started talking about, this is something that anybody with email can do, and more and more of them will do it. So I don't think that asking the spammers who have shown themselves, the big spammers have shown themselves to be rapacious, to self-regulate is really going to be very helpful. I think that Dimitri, in talking about, there's another side of self-regulation, which is the recipient installing filters or whatever,
yeah,
that is more promising, certainly more promising than thinking that a centralized solution is going to be able to sort this out in a way that isn't going to really damage the free flow of information, ideas, and conversation on the Internet.
Adam, what do you think? Is there going to have to be a certain amount of just hold your nose and delete the spam no matter where we end up with this?
I would hope so, frankly, because I think that blanket regulation, as David indicated, is not the solution. I think it's a bad precedent for us simply to regulate out things that we hate. There are a lot of things that we might hate and that are hateable, but for a variety of reasons would set a really dangerous precedent if we decided to eliminate them.
You know, it's sort of ironic that this is coming from a Congress that traditionally has had franking privileges.
Free postage.
Exactly.
But,
exactly.
I mean, let's face it. When the wheel squeaks, the people who are elected to be in charge of the oil, you know, will respond. And people are really ticked off about this. Some people, you live on the net, David, and some people don't have the patience that you do to delete 500 emails. When you said that at the beginning of the program, I thought I'd never do that. I just close the account and get a new name.
Well, I'm ticked off. I'm furious. I'm very angry at what's going on, especially because I so treasure the email conversations and sociality that is threatened.
But aren't
you
saying it's going to get worse before it gets better?
It's always going to get. It's going to be a leapfrogging thing, as with all of these technologies.
I think people are ticked off, but they're also ticked off by the price of prescription drugs. They're ticked off by the fact that the 401ks have been reduced, that $3 trillion was sucked out of the economy because of crooks out there. And I think it's easy for Congress to jump on the bandwagon of non-controversial things that voters are ticked off about, rather than ignoring the really important systemic and structural things.
So what you're saying is if some 23-year-old whiz kid with a really smart idea and a way of getting me another point or two off my mortgage is going to come at me with spam and get one in 100,000, let it happen. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I think Congress has better things to worry about, but this is a very convenient and easy target. And they're helping, I think, to take what is a lot of resentment, and they're fanning the flames of that even further, because it's a political win-win for both sides, and that's why we're seeing such unanimity.
It's an easy target with, unfortunately, an easy and what may turn out to be rather dumb set of solutions that look like they're going to work but actually have unintended consequences that we will regret, and that's what I worry about.
All right, David, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
David Weinberg is a web blogger, author of Small Pieces Loosely Joined, and Adam Hamp, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Adam is president of Hampt, Byrne, Raiboy and Partners in New York City. And a little earlier in the program, we heard from Adam Goldberg, policy analyst at Consumers Union in Washington, D.C., Doug Adams, director of marketing for Insight Express, based in Stamford, Connecticut. And just another reminder, Connection listeners, we began by talking about the telemarketing Do Not Call office in Washington, set up as a place where you can register your phone numbers. If you want to avoid the telemarketers, there is a link on our website. We're at theconnection.org, so you can find out more about them by going to our website. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Don't cause a fuss. I'll have your spam. I love it.